right, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite film podcast, The Average Film Enjoyer. Little bonus episode for you guys today. I'm getting two episodes in 1 week. Been a while since we've done that. But it's going to be a good one today. As usual, we are your Average Film Enjoyers. Trey and Evan Jagger, unfortunately, could not join us today. But we have two very special guests today. It is the first time they are on our podcast. Evan has been on their podcast a couple times and will be on an upcoming episode, I believe, if I am correct, to talk about Beast. But we are happy today to welcome Oscar and Ryan from the Shot by Shot podcast. I'm going to let them talk a little bit more about themselves. But yeah, Oscar, I'll kick it to you first. Why don't you tell the people like where they can find you and, whatever your top four is, whatever you want to do.
So I'm pretty sure most of my places can be found. My letterbox is just Oscar_Trinick, and that's just TRINICK. My Twitter's pretty much the same. Glad that I have a very uncommon surname, because if you just search my name into pretty much Google, you just find everything, really, which is great. But yeah, that's pretty much where you find me. And obviously, Shot by Shot podcast on YouTube. I am Oscar.Trinick on my Instagram as well. Like to write a lot. Wrote an article on this film. Absolutely loved it. My top four, I say all time, right, you should say Paris, Texas, Once Upon a Time in the West, the original Blade Runner, and probably Lord of the Rings.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. And we got Ryan here too. Ryan, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, also from the Shot by Shot podcast. I think it's that on all socials, on Twitter and everything. We do like new movies, blockbusters, classics, mix of everything. So yeah, we'll be doing The Beast next week, which is a really new release that we all liked with Evan. That'll be good next week. My top four, I don't know if I have a top four lockdown, so I'll do horror since it's October. Spider-Man 2 is obviously my favorite movie of all time. But for horror, I would do Return of the Living Dead. I have that now. I think that's one of the best B-movies of all time. It's like a spin-off of the original Night of the Living Dead, if you've not seen that. But it's like really low budget and just so much fun. Army of Darkness, Sam Raimi, of course. Evil Dead 2 is my favorite of the trilogy, but I just have that because it's a cool poster. Here in my profile, Suspiria, it's Argento. I think Argento is one of the best horror directors of all time. And the colors in this are just insane. Yeah. So it's definitely my favorite of his. And then Phantom of the Paradise, Brian De Palma is like also one of my favorite directors, and I just seen that in theaters last month, and that's another like kind of really low budget campy 70s horror movie that's just, it's so good. So yeah, that's my top four then now. But I don't know if I have like a defined top four of all time.
Trey, you gotta watch Phantom of the Paradise.
I know. That's just crazy. Like, I don't know how I feel about De Palma yet. I just don't know. But I don't know. Maybe I just need to get into him a little bit more.
Trey really hates Carrie.
That's because of the end. Like, the third act in the book is just unhinged, and Brian De Palma, if I'm remembering the book correctly, just completely skews away from that. So I didn't love that, but the only other one I've seen is Snake Eyes, and that movie is immaculate. As a massive Nick Cage fan, God, it is so fun. That movie is so much fun.
Great film.
But we're not here today to talk about Brian De Palma as much as we want to. We're here today to talk about a movie that I believe came out about a month ago. It had festival releases last year.
It came out in Canada last year.
Yeah,
it's been Canada's theatrical release was last year.
Oh man, it like just hit theaters here. I figured out it was playing at a theater near my school, and I was like, oh man, I should have done that. But that movie is Red Rooms. This is a new, I hesitate to call it a horror movie. I mean, this goes back, Evan, to our conversation about what constitutes a horror movie. But it is being labeled a horror movie. It's a crime thriller that looks at the obsession of true crime and obsession with that kind of stuff that has recently, there's been a huge uptick in the past few years, whether it's true crime movies, stuff you get like Zodiac, we got Dahmer, the miniseries, I'm going to be bringing up Mindhunter multiple times, or like real, like true crime documentaries, which I feel have gotten huge in the past 10 years. But yeah, we're here to talk about that today. Kind of how we like to do things, fellas, is we all go around and give our opening thoughts, and then then after that, we'll just let the conversation flow and see where it goes. But I'm going to kick it to Oscar first, because he's the one that kind of piqued my interest about this movie, because I read his story. So yeah, Oscar, you want to give your opening thoughts on Red Rooms?
Yeah, this is a film that I wish I'd gotten to see in theaters, but just was insanely limited, like literally nowhere around here. I was paying like, I think like only a handful of cinemas across the country. It was crazy. So, but yeah, I watched it complete pitch black night, just no distractions, best way to watch it. Yeah, this is crazy. For me, it's definitely not a horror film, definitely a thriller, but it's a film that scared me more than I think any horror film this year for sure. It delves in so delicately to this kind of human perception and obsession that I wrote about in my article about true crime and the extent of it and the consequences of it. And obviously I'm just almost certain the crime in the film isn't actually true, but I still think it's still a fascinating kind of look on it. And the direction is kind of very slow. We get a lot of kind of long takes in that in the beginning, particularly in the courtrooms. There's some really, really fascinating long takes there. And yeah, and it has some of the best sound design of the year as well. Just complete silences in some scenes, when it's particularly when she's in her apartment and you can just hear the sounds of the wind on the outside. And it's beautifully sharp and incredibly haunting in its kind of silence and slow burn nature. But it just plays on this idea of curiosity and kind of moral ambiguity between this kind of good and evil obsession with it. And I think the film tries to trick us into thinking that everything is okay, but in actual fact, it really, really is. And yeah, I absolutely love this film.
Yeah. Ryan, what about you? What are your opening thoughts for this movie, especially since you just finished it?
Yeah, just finished it, so all the thoughts are really fresh. It's a weird genre blend. I'm not really sure where to place it either. I think it was horror on Letterboxd, but they've taken it away now when I was looking at it earlier. But yeah, it kind of feels like horror adjacent to like really graphic like French movies of like the like kind of new wave that I think they call it, like the what do they call it, the like, I don't know, there's some name for it, like new French wave, but for like this century, like horror or French horror movies that came out, so like Martyrs or like Gaspar Noé, very extreme like gory films that like almost like they go into like taboo subjects. I feel like this is like almost reaching that. It's like just edging on like being in one of those films, but it doesn't actually go that far and show the graphic content, which it leaves it up to your imagination, and which most of the time does end up being worse, because anything that you can think of is worse than probably anything they can show you, unless it's something like Martyrs where they just go crazy with the gore and does live up to what you're thinking. But yeah, it's very reserved, a genre blend like I was saying, but it's a really good approach to real life horrors like you were saying. And quite a good representation of, I think, of like the dark web as well. It's got a good aspect of that. We were talking about on DD in our podcast that like they done it was like a good approach to like people using the internet, and I think it's also really good here. So yeah, it was a interesting kind of different kind of horror / thriller movie. I'm not really sure where to classify it as a horror either.
I think it's just a really inherently evil film, but I think it's just so evil because it's just a reminder of our society and kind of in general and the way we're fixated on things and our obsessions, which is why I think it works so well. Like this dark web stuff, you see a lot of films kind of try it kind of loosely, and it really doesn't work well. It's never effective, but this is by far probably the most effective execution of the dark web maybe ever, maybe outside of Pulse and something like that. Terrifying, very terrifying, just a very kind of good example of show not tell.
Evan, what about you? Opening thoughts?
I've seen this movie, this is my third time watching. I rewatched it this morning. Well, I rewatched the second half this morning, but I saw this earlier this summer when Remy, shout out Remy, dude's always got the plug on just like hidden bangers, and I loved it. I think it's like a really brilliant depiction of obsession, addiction, like addictive personalities, and like we can get into the like gambling thing later, but I think it's brilliant. I love the courtroom trial stuff feels very unique, and I think one of the things that makes it feel unique is the like literal cage they put Chevalier in, and it's like this glass box instead of like just sitting at the table, and it feels like he's on display, like this showpiece almost. So I think it just feeds into that obsessive thing. So yeah, I find it very unique in its like depiction of serial killers and the stigma, or like this growing fascination with them. Like you have the podcasts that people listen to. My girlfriend is like addicted to Morbid, and I tried to listen to one of the episodes and I couldn't do it. I was really enjoying it, and I got to the part where they described the murder and I turned it off because I was like, I can't do this shit. So I find that so interesting, and I like that this movie kind of asks questions about that and like how easily you can slip into it. There's two sequences in this movie that are just fucking horrifying. There's probably more. Ryan, I was looking at your review and you just tagged split diopter. There's a nasty split diopter in this when they're watching the TV. It's such a long shot. Oh, it's so good. So like camera work wise, it's nuts. Visuals are insane. Yeah. Fucking banger. It's so good.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved this one. The camera work is incredible. As I think both Oscar and Evan mentioned, there's a lot of use of shallow focus shots that I think are really, really important in portraying like the isolation that Kellyanne feels in this movie. Specifically shots of her like looking at her computer, very shallow focus, which I really enjoyed. There's a few deep focus shots in this that are crazy. Like when it'll be focusing on the lawyer. It's in the very beginning when it's focusing on the lawyer, and then it goes into focus on Kellyanne in the background. That I love that kind of shit. I think, as Oscar, as you said, the use of sound in this movie is incredible, and there's a few moments I'll point out later. But I think what's really interesting about this one, and we kind of talked about this in my film class this week, because we were talking about Michael Haneke, it's a director of like Funny Games, Code Unknown, great, great Austrian director, and how like, because I was bringing up Funny Games, and there's that long take after the kid is killed, where you're just sit, like it's just steady cam, your camera doesn't move, you're just sitting there in like this moment for so long, and how so much horror we get nowadays, and I'm not like shitting on it at all, like, but I'll point out like Terrifier 3, like it's insanely graphic, and this stuff is like, it's horrifying, but the way it's presented is so goofy. But when you get stuff like this, like Red Rooms, it it allows you time to sit with these like real horrific moments, while not trying to like offset it with this goofy presentation, which I think is really interesting. But yeah, overall, I loved this movie. The use of sound is incredible. Camera work's really good. I mean, stuff you guys have all already said. The performances are excellent. Yeah, first thing I wanted to ask is, do you guys have a favorite scene from this? Because I personally definitely do. But I was wondering, for you guys, if you guys had a favorite one, and whoever wants to go first can just go.
Spoiler warning, by the way, we're going deep into spoilers. I think it's kind of a tie between the two. I think they're kind of similar, but the scene where she undresses into that schoolgirl outfit in the courtroom is absolutely horrific. That was absolutely crazy. And then, but also kind of the one of the scenes after it where she goes into the house and is like hurting her in the room, and it's just the phone just lights up her face, and it's horrifying.
Yeah,
I thought you were gonna steal mine. I'm gonna go towards the end where she's playing the poker game and she's got like the bedding on the left as well. There's some great tension there.
Yeah.
And she spends a ridiculous amount of money there. I converted it into, because I went to check how much Bitcoin even was worth now, which is like 97,000 Canadian dollars or whatever. So she spent like over 2 million on the video.
What?
That's crazy.
That's absurd. That is actually crazy.
And that's a scene I wanted. That's my favorite scene as well. And it's proof that good sound design goes so far, because you have, when the auction is ticking down, when the time is clicking, like you're hearing the tick, 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 it's kind of used as like, I don't know, like underscoring, but that usually only refers to the use of score to build tension. But that's how it's used, is kind of like this diegetic sound. But the context of which it's in is, you're just like, oh my God, it's used so well. And the cross-cutting that's used between the shots of the poker table and the auction is so good, where it just that whole scene, I was watching it because I texted Evan during this. I was watching this on the train on my way to school, and that whole scene, I was like, oh no. But yeah, that the way the sound is used in that scene and the editing is just, I mean, it was just fucking immaculate. I loved it so much.
Yeah, it's probably the schoolgirl scene is probably my favorite scene. A couple others I want to shout out. The house scene at the end, like the way the rooms light up. I really love the scene where she watches the video for the first time, because the way the screen lights up on her face, it seems like this euphoric moment almost, and it's like this really building score. It's so weird. It's a really strangely like ethereal sound instead of like something more brooding. I think that's great. One other scene that I absolutely love is the opening like remarks from both lawyers at the beginning, because you have the like prosecutor who is just talking about how this is like the most graphic shit she's ever seen. She's apologizing for even putting this information to the jury, and it's like, okay, like fuck this guy, like I'm already on the hate train and I'm already really disturbed. And then the like defender comes out and he's cracking jokes, and he's like, you know, like this, and it's like really wishy-washy, just trying to like play the ego up. And I find that really interesting, because then you kind of see into like why these people are easily sold into like just meat riding serial killers. Like, it's a bad word to say it, but like I just love that comparison between the two tones of the speeches, because it's kind of hard to defend a insanely gruesome murder, and like he immediately just finds one path and pushes on it, and yeah, so I just really love that scene. The scene when they watch the tapes, Kellyanne shows Clementine the tapes. I was saying this to Trey yesterday, and it's like after they watch the first tape and they're starting the second one, and Clementine is like sobbing, and I said to Trey, it almost looks like Kellyanne is pissed off and she's like mad that there's any emotion elicited. It's like, it's hard to tell. And like in your article, Oscar, you're talking about how like they don't give a lot of depth to Kellyanne. She's a pretty mysterious person, so like you don't really know if that's just her normal demeanor or if she's like stop being such a baby type thing, because obviously she's been around, like Kellyanne's seen this stuff. She's definitely seen these tapes many times. She's pointing, she's like, oh, he's gonna look at the camera here and this. So like she's seen these tapes more than once, and I just think that scene brings a lot of depth to Kellyanne. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think her lack of character just adds to the film. I know that's many people's biggest complaint is her being just is such unknown, but I think it plays to the film's blurring of kind of unknowns and what is right and what isn't. And I think that the actress who plays Kellyanne just plays it to real perfection. And when you were talking about the opening remarks from the judges, I kind of like how that just sets the scene of the two ideas, just good and evil right there. And then obviously we get that side, Clementine, that's her name, that other female character, which I think is a good kind of opposite, especially we get that two shot when they're both watching the video, like the facial expression. She is just so dead set and deadpan, and yeah, Clementine is just not having it. But yeah, just really, really fantastic. And that when like the red on her face just gets really oversaturated, I think that's really brilliant as well.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to talk about that this movie brings up is the role of media in trials like this that are very sensationalized, because even before like you get the scene right after they leave the trial and on the first day, and even before any evidence is shown or anything, the media is saying like, yep, this guy did it, you know, and how hard that can be for a jury. When, I mean, Clementine has a line about it where she says, she's talking about showing the braces, the decomposing jaw, yeah, to the guilty, to the jury. And Clementine talks about, like, you can strike it from the record, but the damage is done. And like how no matter how hard you try, these outside sources, the media and things like that are always going to affect the jury. And like going into like more of Clementine's character, the obsession that Evan, or I think all three of you guys have mentioned at some point, the obsession with, excuse me, these serial killer figures. I mean, if you go back and watch clips from the Ted Bundy trial and like them interviewing girls that were at the trial saying like, oh, he's kind of dreamy. I don't think he killed all those people. Or like even recently when Dahmer came out, how like it kind of felt like they sexualized him. And like everybody was like, oh, he's so hot and all this stuff. And there was even that joke at the Oscar, it was either the Oscars or the Golden Globes that year, that they put on the Dahmer glasses, and there was like this whole trend of like being like and like it was like this, I don't know, it kind of felt like dismissive of the real issues. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, this guy was still... He would kill people, and then he would eat them. Like, but, I just was wondering...
And then also have, like, Zac Efron playing Ted Bundy, like...
Yeah, that movie's... I have weird feelings about it. I think it's, Oh, I can never remember the title. It's really long. Like, extremely shocking.
Yeah. Evil and vile.
Yeah. And that one is really interesting because it goes more into, like, the effect he had on people, on, like, Ted Bundy, and more into the idea of, like, these girls that are watching this trial finding him attractive and finding him as this sex symbol. They go more into that in that film. But I'm just wondering if you guys have any thoughts on that and, like, why there is this obsession with these awful, awful people.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one. When I was doing my article, I was just looking at some research about people's obsessions, and apparently it is inherently... females who are more kind of pulled into all these true crime things, and possibly why that explains maybe why our lead protagonist is, or lead protagonists are female, but who knows. But it's said that they seem to be more kind of interested in story that dives into kind of motives and all this information. It didn't really give more specifics why, but this was done over 10 years ago, so things can absolutely have changed then, and I think the drive for obsession with true crime is just absolutely skyrocketed then. Netflix seemed to be profiting off it a lot. Yeah, the recent one, what was it, the Menendez brothers, or I think
that was the same guy that done Dahmer as well, was it not? Was it Ryan Murphy?
Yeah, I think it was.
And Oscar, not to just the Menendez brothers, and I think it's because of this, the show, that someone reviewed their case, and they're up for immediate parole. Like, it, like, just happened yesterday. They're now up for parole. Like, they changed their sentencing, which is, like, going back to that idea of, like, the media having an effect on these trials and these real issues. But Oscar, keep going. I just wanted to bring that before I forgot it.
I think it just comes down to human nature and curiosity for these kind of things. I don't really watch, like, I haven't watched, like, the Dharma or the Menendez brothers. I don't watch, like, a lot. There's, like, a little interest, but I don't really go out of my way to watch or listen to any of the podcasts or anything. But inherently, I think it generally is just down to human nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, like, a weird gray area where they, like, glorify them, but, like, they're kind of entertaining still. Like, I did like Dharma. Even, like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood kind of explores, like, even the Manson family, like, back in the 60s, Manson, where they just had, like... Yeah, they just looked Man like Hunter, hippies, but, like, they were, like, that's... helping them murder people.
I guess Manhunter's probably the big thing that I love around that kind of true crime area, but I guess that's not necessarily documentary style. I don't know if you guys have seen it. But that show's incredible. Unfortunately, got cancelled, honestly.
Trey's favorite TV show of all time.
Yeah, it's my all-time favorite. And I just got, I don't know when, Evan, was that like 2 months ago that we watched it together? I was down for a rewatch, and I forced Evan to watch it with me. And he got pissed at me when it finished that there wasn't a season 3. And I was like, I know, dude, we're all pissed. Yeah. Because they were, like, totally setting up the BTK killer throughout the entire second season. And but yeah, even that, it's like,
yeah,
me and Evan talked about, where, like, all the stuff they do with Ed Kemper, it's so weird to watch, because there would be moments that I would find myself, like, watching this and being like, man, this Ed Kemper guy ain't too bad of a dude. And then he'd talk about, yeah, I beheaded my mom and then I fucked her head. And then you're like, oh God, bad dude. And it's just, it's so odd, you know, why we have the obsession with these things. Because, yeah, Mindhunter is I think it's one of the best TV shows ever made. Zodiac is probably in my top 20 movies of all time. So is Prisoners. And yeah, I don't know. It's definitely interesting. And yeah, it's weird. It's weird for sure. Yeah. Evan, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think one of the other things I think is interesting to think about is like how they got into it, because like Clementine, you know, super like go, very energetic person with a lot of emotion, and you can tell maybe something just struck a chord, you know, related to the loner aspect or something like that. You know, she's homeless in Montreal, you know, doesn't really have any money, and like maybe something struck a chord, and that kind of makes sense because she just is like longing for connection, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Kellyanne is a lot different. Like, with Kellyanne, I was saying to Trey, like, two things. One, like, this addictive personality that she has, she's playing cards and, you know, making money. She says, oh, money is just numbers in a computer, but like, she still likes to do it. And she's like playing poker on her phone at breakfast. She's like, oh, I just won us enough money to cover breakfast. So, like, it's like this obsession with her. And then there's this scene where Clementine brings her a coffee, or like buys a coffee, and she's like, oh, it's wrong. And Kellyanne's like, well, you could go back and change it. She's like, I can. He's like, yeah, you should go back right now. Like, go, I'll save your spot. And it's like this immediate, she like grasps onto this idea that something bad happened, but is like, she's like, you have to fix this right now. Like, don't let this sit. And I just thought that was such a like interesting moment, because it went from a pleasant exchange to this like really controlling situation. And I brought up this comparison to Trey, and I know it's different, but like with the workout regimen and, you know, the perfect house that's always spotless, doesn't really drink alcohol, it gave me Patrick Bateman vibes.
Yeah, but actually.
Yeah. So and it's not the same thing where it's like this, but, you know, constantly exercising. And I thought that the music playing while she's exercising was really interesting, because it's like this poppy thing at the beginning, and it just goes to straight like heavy metal by the end of the movie. And yeah, so I think with the true crime thing, like it makes sense that someone like Clementine could get sucked into it and glorify it, because that's what these massively publicized trials do. Like, and with Mindhunter, everyone's talking about, oh my god, Charles Manson, like, oh my god, this, that. It's, you're excited to see a depiction of a killer because you're interested in it. It's this like really morbid curiosity that is this unspoken thing that everyone kind of, it's like, yeah, you might not watch you might not listen to the podcasts like I don't, but you're curious, so you're gonna check it out. And
I mean, even Terrifier, like Trey mentioned, yeah, that we go to that for gore and like, yeah, the extremes of horror.
Yeah. And like you brought up Martyrs earlier, like I've seen Martyrs a few times because I think that Martyrs asks really interesting questions, even though it's so gratuitous. Like, I'll put aside the violence because, and I'll just accept it, and it's okay. Like, it's this, yeah, it's this weird like human nature that is kind of scary, but yeah, it's like a universal experience, especially in this age. Maybe like less for older people.
It's always the French, man.
Yeah, French.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this is Canadian. Sorry, in this case,
it's Canadian.
Same.
Equally bad.
Yeah, it's the French, and then all this stuff, like stuff I see from South Korea, is like God, what is, I can never remember the name. Evan, what is that one? The guy from Old Boy plays the serial killer.
I saw the devil.
That was
an interesting one.
That's great. Like, film.
Even that ending.
Like, fuck yeah.
You're just like, what the fuck? Or Old Boy. It's just like, this upset. And like, even me personally, like, throughout my movie journey, I went through a phase where, like, what's the most messed up thing I can sit through? Like, where is my limit? Fortunately, I found it. But even now, like, and this goes into the idea of being desensitized to stuff. Like, I love all movies, but I probably watch more horror than anything else. And, like, I'll show people some of my favorite horror movies, and I'll be like, yeah, this is pretty tame. And then they'll watch it, and they'll be like, what the fuck? And I'm like, am I okay? Like, I showed some friends at school As Above, So Below. And I was like, this is pretty... Yeah. No, okay, Oscar, we're not getting into that. We're not... The Descent is like shit. Descent? It's the most overrated movie of all time. It is so...
As Above, So Below. That's crazy. The Descent is so good.
Descent is so unbelievably mid and boring. Oh my god.
It has one of the greatest jump scares of all time.
It does. It has one of the greatest jump scares ever.
That's crazy. We could have an entire 3-hour episode just off of my hot takes that upset Oscar and Ryan.
Yeah.
Because the amount of grief that I've gotten from them in the Discord is... it's a lot. But, like, As Above, So Below. Like, I think the four of us can agree that is not, like, it's not that graphic. No. I mean, there's a few scenes
I've
where
not
you're
seen
like...
It's National Treasure set in the Paris with ghosts.
National
Treasure. Yeah, dude, it's
dope. I just know it's going to be a really bad rip-off of The Descent.
Oh, it's definitely a rip-off, but it's better.
it's a good fan footage movie. The French catacombs are really scary, though. Look at effect.
I've been.
You've been?
Oh, really?
I've been to the French catacombs in Paris. Yeah.
Never
Isn't
doing
it
that.
Like 50-50 that you just get robbed if you go down there with like a guide?
That's just the entirety of Paris. That's not the catacombs. It's just Paris. there's just obviously like lines of bones, and there's like hearts made out of bones and just skulls. And yeah, it's an interesting place.
Yeah, but like, there's a few kills in that, but like, it's a lot of like, there's very little blood, and it's a lot of like the classic like PG-13 horror movie where it'll show it to you for like a split second, and then like whip pan away for like a reaction shot. So like, I'm like, yeah, this one, it's got some solid jump scares, but like, that's about it. And I watched it with my friends, and they were like, ah, Trey, this is so messed up. And I'm like, oh, Lord, if you want to see messed up, boy, have I got some stuff for you.
Oscar, it's got a jump scare that's straight from The Exorcist 3. You know what I'm talking about.
Which jump scare?
There's just like a ghost that walks past in the background.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
It's very Exorcist 3, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys have had that experience to where, like, you watch stuff, like, it's interesting watching stuff with non-movie or non-horror buffs and seeing, like, what actually disturbs them. Yeah. And I don't know if you guys have had any experiences like that, but that's always been super interesting to me because it always makes me realize how desensitized I am to stuff like that, where I'm just like, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I tried to show my brother Terrifier 2, and he couldn't handle it. And he loves horror movies, so it's just like, I don't know. Sometimes the like over the top gratuitous shit is just too much. Like, I showed him the bedroom scene on YouTube, and he's like, "Turn it off." And then, but like, yeah, I think I'm desensitized. Like last year, I did like a triple feature of like Salo, Cannibal Holocaust, and then a Serbian film like in a week, and it was like. Yeah, I mean, a Serbian film is a whole different, like, just shock value.
Yeah, I'm never going that far.
There's no merit in it. Salo and Cannibal Holocaust.
Salo is
I think,
good film.
I don't like. I
and
think it's
so
super
is Cannibal
boring.
Holocaust.
Cannibal Holocaust, good movie. Like that's one that's like.
I think I watched both of those in the same day. Actually,
yeah,
I remember.
Cannibal Holocaust is one where, it's like, you know, got all this huge name behind it where it's like, oh, the director was arrested because they thought that he killed the cat.
He was killed. And
then, oh, was he?
The director, I'm pretty sure, was killed, but I'm pretty sure the producers were arrested. Wait. Was this Cannibal Holocaust or Solo?
The Cannibal Holocaust. Solo, the director, was killed, yeah.
I thought you were talking about Solo then, yeah. I don't know about Cannibal Holocaust, but yeah. Director is killed because of Solo. Yeah. But yeah, desensitization is an interesting thing because I think the Terrify films, I guess I kind of have, but for me, the Terrify films are so gory, they just become ineffective. And I don't think that's just because of desensitization. I think that's just because of the way they just throw all the gore at you. And it's just, it just becomes really ineffective. And like in another film, if like something like that happened, if it was built up in a different way or just took me by surprise, it would be so much more effective. But for those films, it's cool practical effects, I guess. But like for the most part, it's so gory. It just isn't gory.
Yeah.
Stuff like Terrifier. I don't think it's trying to be like shock. At least people that are into horror, it's like trying to like dive into like the B movie roots of like just having cool practical effects. I don't think it's like aiming to freak you out. Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like once you watch a lot of horror, you like just don't get scared by anything. And I think that that's a lot of people what they quantify horror as, is like if it's not scary, it's not horror. And it's a weird place because people that are actually into horror are like,
that's the stupidest thing, they basically never watch a scary
movie. Like, very rare films that scare me.
Yeah, well, in some of the films that have scared me the most aren't even horror movies, like, or like that have disturbed me the most. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen a Spotlight with Ruffalo, Michael Keaton's in it. Like, that movie, I'm not kidding when I say I sat there for a good 30 minutes after the credits finished, just staring at my wall, you know, and that like horrified me and disturbed me more than most horror films have. You know, and that's not even like, that's like a true story. So it's just interesting. And like me and Evan talk about this all the time, like what, like everybody has their own little thing, like subgenre of horror that scares them the most. And then there's like tiny little niche thing, like Evan talked about last night, we were talking about Hereditary, like tiny little niche things that scare people the most. And like for me, it's every time if there is like footsteps getting louder, like running towards the camera, and you can't see the source of the footsteps, I'm done. Like, get me a new pair of pants, guys, because boy, oh boy, that scares me. There's a scene in It Chapter 2 where with the evil old grandma that's like 10 feet tall and is like decaying, you hear her running out of the kitchen and you don't see her. God, dude, it freaks me out. And Evans is like anything that a human does to themselves that is like not natural. So like it's scene like, in Hereditary where she's banging her head on the attic door
and they're doing it fast. And then like,
I think for me, it's the quickness. That would just make me uncomfortable.
Have you guys seen Gungeum, Haunted Asylum?
No, I haven't.
Okay. No. There's something in there that is very similar to that. And it really freaks me out. Something that kind of touches it is acupuncture scene in Audition, where she's like making the noises and moving her hands, really good. That shit just really gets under my skin.
For me, it's just people standing still in corners of dark rooms.
it's like darkness where you can't see what's happening, like cool shit.
And then you can just see like an outline. There's a one of them in The Conjuring 2 where it's like it's a painting and then like it makes it look like it's the nun. You like just see the faint outline of the eyes and it's like
I know exactly what you're talking about.
things, people standing still in dark corners, just not moving. That I'm like, no, thank you. Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
That was why the new Hell House movie scared me, because there's lots of scenes in that where they just look at like dark corners and like the film footage style. That's like the stuff that proper gets me.
Yeah,
and that's really interesting, like the use of like negative space to scare you. The one that does it, in my opinion, the best, that I always go back to, that Evan and most people don't understand why I glaze this movie so hard. Lee Winnell's The Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss.
It's a good movie.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about something else.
No. There's the other thing, I've just remembered it. It's people taking photos of someone in the dark room, the sound of it. There's that scene in The Invisible Man where you can't see him, and at night he wakes up and like you just hear the camera click and the flash. I hate that. I absolutely hate the sound of people taking photos of people in horror movies. I don't know why.
Well, and then there's the one, like, when people, like, you, like, take photos to, like, use the flash to see. Like, at the, I don't know, have you guys seen Host, the Rob Savage movie that came out?
Yeah, that really scared me as well.
The laptop one?
Yeah, though, it's like 50 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yes, I've seen it. That is good.
So the scene at the end where she keeps taking pictures with the Polaroid to get the flash, and then the jump scare is like perfectly timed. Oh my god. That is a jump scare that will never fail to get me. But yeah, like in Invisible Man, there's shots where Lee Winnell will like there's a shot of the kitchen and the kitchen is just empty, but you're already introduced to the idea that this guy's invisible, and it's like your brain plays tricks on you where you're like, is that an outline right there?
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And the use of sound design in that movie with like the cameras on the suit, like the if you listen really closely, you can hear it in a lot of scenes. And, oh, God. Yeah, I could glaze that movie all day.
It's a good film.
Yeah.
Have you seen Shutter? Movie. Like, the Thailand movie?
Oh, no.
That really gets me.
I glaze
They take, like, photos, Trey, and it's like, they can see like, the ghosts, like, behind them if they like to see if they're haunted. It's really
so good. 4.5.
That one's been high on my watch list for a while. But, yeah.
Yeah, the unknown is a really... like interesting one. We're gonna talk about it a lot tomorrow with the Beast. But like, and Oscar, you bring it up earlier, I think, but like with Red Rooms, it's what you don't see, and this one I think makes it even worse because you can see like just a little bit. You see a bloody chair, like see the walls coated in blood, and that's just like seeing the aftermath, I think, is like almost scarier because then it puts you in like, oh, this is what happened, and you hear what happened. You know, they're assaulted, murdered, dismembered. So you have to like, you see the like aftermath, but you have to paint the picture in your head of how it got there. And I love that they show that little snippet. Trey texted me when he was watching this. He's like, I'm on the train, and they're about to show Clementine the movie or like the clips. How graphic is it? And I say, you don't see anything. Like, you just hear it. And you just hear the reactions. And he's like, okay, good. But, like, ultimately, that's almost worse. It's just so disturbing.
And well, yeah. Luckily for that, I had my headphones in. I was just worried because there was, like, one of the public transportation system is called TriMet. And there was, like, a TriMet safety officer sitting like diagonally behind me, perfectly able to see my screen, and I'm like I pause it and I'm like, Evan, please tell me it doesn't get really graphic here. And he's like, no, it's fine. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm just gonna put in my headphones and it'll be fine.
The build-up to that scene for me was so intense, like the two, like this and the schoolgirl scene, like I was just on the edge of my seat. Like, you feel anxious because you know what you're gonna get, but getting into it is so tense. And I love how this fucking movie does it. It builds tension so well, and the score is so good.
It's a great,
like, one of the more interesting scenes, because it's like at that point you think Clementine's like this like really like serious, like she has like insight in the case and like everything, like because she's defending him so much, like, I just assumed that she'd, like, seen everything up to that point. And then she just has that, like, breakdown and just leaves the movie completely after she sees the two movies. And it really, like, up to that point, it's kind of making it out to be that, like, Kellyanne and is, like, or, like, the, out of the two of them, like, Clementine's the weirdo. And that kind of reveals that, I don't know, she might even be worse than Clementine, even though she's not, like, outspoken about how much of a psychopath she is at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have the whole scene when she calls into the TV show, too, and she's crying and spouting off, and it's like, holy shit, like, what got you to this point?
She's, like, just blindly defending him. And I think I like how they make, like, a big point about her, like, seeing good in his eyes or something, like, that's why she, like, started to like him. And then in the video, that's, like, the only thing you can see of him, of the killer. You can just see his eyes through the mask. But yeah, going back to, like, the spectacle side, I think that's probably one of the most interesting parts of the movie, like, the way it explores how, like, we're always drawn into kind of the horror, how, or going into, like, an incident, even if we know how horrible it is. Kind of like how Nope explored it in Jordan Peele's movie. Like, even when it's a murder of three girls, you are still kind of intrigued, and I think the film uses that to its advantage, because it keeps you kind of, like, invested in the case, because you in a way do want to kind of see the what he did do in the videos, even though it doesn't go that far and show it. And it is really effective the way it does it with Seven. It was almost like Zone of Interest in parts, where, like, the sound was really haunting. Just that pursuit of the leaked videos was really interesting.
They build it up too, because they play the videos in the courthouse, and they like, first you hear a little bit of it and the mom walks out, and then a paramedic shows up out. So you're like, holy fuck. But yeah, it's totally like a thing you don't want to say, but you're like, I kind of want to see this video, like,
I'm glad I'm not the only one that was feeling that way. I was like,
it's weird,
this just makes me want, like, I was telling my dad, because my dad is a little bit of a film buff, not as much as he used to be, but I always talk to him about the stuff we talk to about on the pod. We've had him on before. Evan wasn't here, but it was back when it was just me and Jagger. Another reason why I'm disappointed Jagger couldn't be here today. I wanted Jagger and Oscar to talk, because you two are, like, the two smartest film people I know. Oh, why is it doing balloons every time? Come on, StreamYard. But I just wanted to hear you guys talk about movies, because you guys are, like, the two smartest film people, like, I know personally. But we had my dad on for Groundhog's Day, I think it was. But I even told him, like, with all the stuff that was happening with Terrifier 3, like, how it wasn't even rated, and how, like, AMC released a statement in America, like, their staff will be, like, trained in first aid, and they're handing out barf bags and all this stuff. And I told my dad, I was like, I know it sounds fucked up, but it makes me want to see it even more. And my dad looks at me and he goes, yeah, Trey, that's fucked up.
They do that on purpose, though. It's just a marketing thing.
Yeah,
it's just a marketing.
Doing it since
that's exactly why they do it.
Yeah, because it works.
Yeah, there was that headline. It's like 9 people walked out in the first scene, and then it's like, oh yeah, this was a random screening, and they didn't tell anybody that it was going to be Terrifier 3. So you're not getting people who want to be there, but still, I go watch Terrifier for the gore, and it's like, this is fucking hilarious. Like,
yeah,
I didn't even like 3, and I'll you go see the next one. Just I like Art the Clown. He's silly and he's goofy.
Yeah,
but the melodrama in those films suck.
Yeah, well, I talked to the marketing is such an interesting thing, because my dad, when Blair Witch Project came out, my dad was in. Like, okay, Oscar.
We were just talking about how you hate people standing in corners of rooms, and that movie has one of the scariest scenes.
Oh, wow, the ending.
Yeah.
Oscar, you think The Descent is a good horror movie, so your opinion is...
The Blair Witch Project is one of the single worst horror films I've ever seen.
That's crazy.
I absolutely despise that film.
But looking outside of the movie itself, the marketing, my dad was in eighth grade when that movie came out. And that was, like, the first found footage, the first huge found footage. And they kept the marketing, they marketed it as, like, not a horror movie. Like, this is a documentary that we've put together. We found, like, this is all real. And they kept marketing such on a lockdown. My dad, all, like, he loves talking about it because everybody thought it was real. And, like, it had that much more an effect when you saw it because he, like, talked about how he saw it in the theater with some friends, and he was like, yeah, I didn't go outside after dark for, like, a month. And
they
it's
don't
just
handle,
crazy.
Like, missing posters at the screenings of those? As if, like, people were actually missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't do any press either with the cast. They weren't allowed to, like, talk about it.
Yeah.
That's another thing. It's like, but everyone gets excited about it to go see it, and it's, like, the same shit here.
Yeah, really the same thing happened with The Exorcist, because I know at the premiere of that, and the, it was actually cast, and Friedkin, like, claimed this, so I don't even know if it is fake, but it was, like, people were passing out, throwing up, like, running out of, like, the actual premiere of the film, and then people just seem to copy that every time a movie with any gore comes out.
Yeah, but that one, like, even now, that movie creeps me out, like, some of the practical effects in that movie are something else. But yeah,
really
that...
like, none of us could have seen this in theaters. Wish Alex was here.
I'm annoyed, because it was actually in theaters near me, but nobody had seen it when it came out, so, like, I didn't... Like, it wasn't on my radar, and then you and Remy seen it, and then everybody started giving it, like, fives and four and a half, and I was so annoyed that I didn't go to see it.
I was looking on the Letterboxd releases, and it premiered at the film festival in my city in, like, July last year. And I had no fucking idea. Like, it's so... I was talking to Alex about it, and he's like, I hate watching movies in film festivals because, number one, like, you don't always know what to see. But it's like... I can't remember what exactly he said, but he said that just the setting is tough, and you kind of rely on other people to know what to go see. Do you get that, Oscar? Like, you were just at London.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, you missed a lot of movies, did you not? Like, that Remy gave really high ratings. So, like, you both went to, like, a lot of movies.
Yeah, there was some stuff that I wasn't necessarily interested in. I'm trying to think if there was that summer book one. But yeah, you're always going to have, like, ones that aren't kind of the big name hitters. I'll probably try and go see one of those, but like smaller ones, Happy End that I saw, that was really, really good. I got last minute tickets for that just because I'd seen loads of really great scores from mutuals, kind of who'd seen it at New York Film Festival and before that, so that was really, really great. But yeah, there's always going to be stuff you're going to miss out on. Like, kind of, I guess Red Rooms would have been at that time, because no one really knew anything. Like, it was at London Film Festival last year, as well. But yeah, it's just what happens, I guess.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us, Oscar and Ryan, on the pod today. We hope to see you guys back soon. I know we have a blast when we have guests on, because we do, when Jagger's there, we have a lot of fun. But if Jagger's not there, the whole podcast is like, this is peak, right? Yeah, this is peak. We have slowly figured that out, that me and Evan rarely disagree, unless it's the ending of Unforgiven, which I want to ask you guys, have you seen Unforgiven, the Clint Eastwood movie? No? Okay, then we won't talk about it. Me and Evan had very differing opinions on it.
Trey Glazes the Poughkeepsie Tape super hard in that movie.
I do.
Oh, I
the
Poughkeepsie
Tape
is such a piece of shit.
That movie, that is the movie that has fucked, like, disturbed me the most, the Poughkeepsie Tapes. It's just so fucked. But that's we'll save that for another episode. Thank you for joining us on the Average Film Enjoyer today. Again, everybody, comment down below what your thoughts, like, what your favorite true crime is, because I think everybody has a favorite. I think we'll see a lot of Zodiac, a lot of Prisoners. Well, that Prisoners isn't true crime, but it's kind of in the same realm. Again, subscribe to our channel, give us a follow, Give us a follow on our Letterboxd HQ. Evan is in charge of that, keeping that updated. Looks really good. You'll get all our updates there. AFEpod.com. Get your average film enjoyer merch before the spooky season is over. We may do a kind of November sale. Kind of try to see if you guys can get your spooky season merch for next year. There will be links down below to not only the Shot by Shot podcast, Oscar and Ryan's podcast, which is really great. I really respect it because they do one movie a week and they talk about that one movie for 2 to 3 hours, and I could never do that. My brain can't stick on one movie for that long. So definitely go check out theirs. They go super in depth. It's really great listening to it. And I will also put a link down below to Oscar's article about Red Rooms. I would highly recommend it if you want to see more of his thoughts. It's really well written. And Oscar, is there any way, like, is there a certain, like, news website that you always put your stories up on, or,
I'm working on a portfolio at the moment, but nothing at the moment. It's just whoever it ends up on. Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing except my own website, but yeah.
Well, when you have your, like, portfolio or website or whatever, let me know and I'll pop a link down below so people can go ahead and find it, because I know I really like reading your stuff. You're a really good writer. So,
thank you.
And that should say a lot because I fucking hate reading. So, unless it's about movies, I love reading about movies. So definitely go check out both of those things. And we'll see you guys Wednesday for 41 Ron and the Truman Show and the conclusion of our John Carpenter deep dive with what's the one on Mars, Evan? What's it called again?
Ghosts
of Mars.
It stars Ice Cube and Jason Statham.
Ice Cube, Jason Statham, and Pam Grier. Yeah, 2001. So quite excited for that. Join us for that. And have a good rest of your day.